Welcome here this morning. My name is Keith. I'm one of the pastors here. I maybe haven't had an opportunity to meet you, but I'm delighted that you're here this morning and you've chosen to worship Jesus with us. Or perhaps you're here this morning and you're kind of new to the Jesus thing. You're not sure about the Jesus thing. I want you to know that this is a place for you, that you belong here, and we're delighted that you're here this morning. We are going to begin this morning, we are going to begin an 8-month journey through the Gospel according to John. Now, Leon Morris, biblical scholar, has described the book of John as a pool into which both a child can wade and an elephant can swim. That the Gospel of John is both simple and profound. The Gospel of John is for both the beginner, the one in search of truth, and also for the mature in Christ. Its appeal, he says, is limitless. This morning, I want to invite you into the waters that are the Gospel of John. I'd like to invite you to stand with me this morning as I read from the Gospel of John. So would you stand for a reading of the Gospel this morning? And as you stand, could you turn to John chapter 1? John chapter 1, starting in verse 1, and we will read to the end of verse 18. John 1, 1 to 18. The word of the Lord. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life. And that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to those who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to be called children of God. Children born not of a natural descent, nor of a human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, sent from the Father, full of grace and truth. John testified concerning him. He cried out, saying, "This is the one I spoke about when I said, 'He who comes after me has surpassed me because he was before me.' Out of his fullness, we have all received grace in place of grace already given. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and in closest relationship with the Father, he has made him known." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. How does one begin to explain Jesus? How does one begin to explain Jesus? Mark, in his gospel, Mark, in his description, explanation of Jesus, he begins by explaining Jesus at the start of his earthly ministry when he is baptized by John the Baptist. For Matthew, in his gospel, this doesn't seem to go far enough back to explain Jesus, and so he goes back to Abraham. Luke, in his gospel, this isn't even far enough back. He goes all the way back to Adam to explain who Jesus is. But for John, this isn't quite far enough back. For John, to explain Jesus, he understands that before John the Baptist was, and before Abraham was, even before Adam was, in the beginning was. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Word. What does John mean by the Word? What is he speaking about when he speaks about the Word? Well, perhaps the most simplest description that I can give you is that first, the word in the original language is logos. So John here says that in the beginning was the logos, and the logos was with God, and the logos was God. What is the logos? Most simply, the logos is God's self-revealing word. God, who is spirit, reveals himself through the Word. God, who is unknown, he makes himself known through the Word. That's what the Logos is. It's God's self-revealing Word. Let me give you an example to help us understand. I may have a thought in my head, but that thought is unknown to you. It's private to me. It's unknown to you because it's my thought. That is, of course, until I give it word. That when I speak the word that is the thought, my thought is revealed to you. This is what the Logos is, God's self-revealing word. God, who is spirit, is revealed through the word. God, who is unknown, is made known through the word. And in verse 18 of our text this morning, it gives us a picture. No one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God, and in closest relationship with the Father, he has made him known. How does one begin to explain Jesus? John brings us back to the very beginning, and he says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word was Jesus. See, John takes us back to the very, very beginning. There are two books of the Bible that start in the beginning, right? We have the book of John, of course, in the beginning was the Word, but we also have the book of Genesis. In the beginning, God created. John, you might be surprised to see, brings us even further back to the beginning than the book of Genesis. Because in the book of Genesis, we read, in the beginning, God created. This is the divine action. But in the book of John, we read, in the beginning was. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. In John, we actually have a divine being. In Genesis, God creates. In John, God stands before creation, and he simply is. How does one begin to explain Jesus? In the beginning. Before anything was, that anything is, before it was, before creation, was the Word. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. Through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. And in him was life. And that life was the light of all mankind. John wants us to know from the very outset that what we are about to read is not simply the story about Jesus, but rather this is a story about all of us. This isn't simply a story about Jesus, but it's a story about all of us. The passage that we read here in John chapter 1, verses 1 to 18 is often called the prologue to John's gospel. And the prologue serves two functions. First, the prologue to John serves to introduce many of the themes that we are going to see over the next 8 months as we walk through his gospel. We see themes like light and darkness, themes like life. We see themes like glory. And so the prologue introduces many of these themes that we see throughout the gospel. But secondly, the prologue serves as a lens through which to read the entire gospel. That when we read the prologue, it's like putting on a set of glasses so that we might understand everything else that follows. Because for John, he wants to make it very clear from the outset that though we read the story of Jesus, Though we read the story of a man who walked the earth, that speaks and acts, John wants us to know who that man really is. He wants us to read the rest of his gospel with eyes wide open to see Jesus as he really is. Fully man, but fully God. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. As we step into the book of John, we also come to see in the prologue that this isn't simply Jesus' story. We come to see that this is the story of every human person. That the Gospel of John here has a bearing on every human being. It has meaning for every single human person that has ever lived. Because in the Gospel of John, Jesus makes a claim over all of creation. Verse 3, through him, all things were made. In the Gospel of John, Jesus makes a claim over all of life. Verse 4, in him was life. In the Gospel of John, Jesus makes a claim over every human person. Verse 4, that life was the light of all mankind. Verse 9 says that the true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. It's the light that gives light to everyone. In the Gospel of John, Jesus makes a claim to truth. Because in verse 14, we're told he is full of grace and truth. In the Gospel of John, Jesus makes the claim over all of creation, over all of life, over all of humanity, and over all truth. Whoa. This is a big book. In the Gospel of John, John is making the grand statement that Jesus holds the key to the really real. That when we read the Gospel of John, we are invited to see the world as it really is. Not as the world we think it is, but the world as it really is. That the Gospel of John is claiming to be the one true story. The one true story that holds the keys to reality. The one true story that holds the keys to life. Both how to receive life and how to fully live life. Both now and into eternity. That's a big story. But our culture, of course, our culture is highly skeptical of any grand story, isn't it? Are you tracking with me in this? That our culture is skeptical of any one group or any group of people who say they know what is true for all people at all times and in all places. Our culture is highly skeptical of any one worldview or religion that claims to know the truth that is the truth for everyone. I mean, we have a number of university students here, and I know that you're living this as you go, particularly if you're in a literature department or an English department. That there is this war that seems to be waged against the idea that there is one truth that governs all people. But here's the reality. A universal truth, a truth that is true for all people at all times and in all places, it happens. It exists. And allow me to give you an example, though it's not a pleasant example. I'll admit that off the bat. I want you to imagine someone that you love, someone that you care about. And now for just a moment, a very brief moment, I want you to imagine how it would feel. How it would feel if someone did something brutal, unjust, unprovoked to the person you love. Okay, enough imagining. That's enough. I don't need to ask you how you would feel. I can tell you how you would feel, because you would feel the exact same way I would feel. That you would feel that some great violation has taken place. You would feel that an injustice happened. You would feel outraged and angry. And do you know how I know that? Because it's a universal truth. That you could ask anyone at any time, in any place, to do this very same thing, and we would come to the same conclusion. Because there is a universal truth that when someone does something that is brutal and unjust and unprovoked to someone we love, we react. that it's unjust. See, there is such a thing as a universal truth, something that is true for all people at all times and in all places. Jesus. Jesus is a universal truth. Jesus is the universal truth. And the Gospel of John is inviting us into the truth. He's inviting us to come and know the one who is the truth. Because Jesus makes a claim over all creation, over all of life, over all of humanity, and over all of truth. And this is your invitation. That as we step into the book of John over the next 8 months, Jesus is inviting you. And he's calling you to see the world as it really is. To know the truth. The truth about life. And how to receive it. The truth about how to really live the life that God has planted in you. Or perhaps the God that he's knocking on the door of your heart and saying, I want to plant my life in you. This is your invitation. As we set out to enter into the Gospel of John, it's appropriate for us to ask the question, why does John write this gospel? Why is he writing this gospel in the first place? Well, thankfully, John answers that question for us in his own words. And that's in John chapter 20, in verse 30 to 31. Let me read it for you. It's on the screen. This is why John wrote his gospel. He writes, Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe. That you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. Now, there are three things I want to draw your attention to in John chapter 20 here. Three things. First, we see in verse 31 that John writes this gospel for you. But these things are written that you may believe. John, God in his sovereignty, inspired a man some 2,000 years ago to write down the accounts of Jesus so that you might believe. This is John's invitation. It's his invitation to you to come and to believe Jesus and receive the life that he has. That's what John's gospel is. That over the next 8 months, as you turn to John's gospel, may you know what he is inviting you into. I think that's beautiful. The second thing that I want you to note about why John writes this gospel is we're told that he writes these things so that you might believe. Now, John uses the word belief in a very specific way. In fact, believe is one of John's favorite words. We run into this word 98 times in the book of John. It's one of the most used words in the book of John. In fact, John uses it more than any other writer in the New Testament. The word believe is an important word for John. And there's a particular way that he uses it that I believe helps us understand what he's inviting us into. First, when John uses the word believe, he never uses it as a noun. For John, belief or faith is not something that we have. It's not a thing that we have, right? We often use the word belief or faith in this way because I'm using belief and faith. It's the same Greek word used to translate both. We talk about, I have faith. And we talk about faith as a noun. It's this thing that we have. John doesn't use the word believe that way. Rather, for John, belief is always a verb, never a noun. For John, belief is always action. It is always an action. Now, the other way that John uses the word belief, when he uses this verb throughout his gospel, he most often uses it in what we would call the present tense in Greek. Now, this is a bit of a language lesson for us this morning, isn't it? We don't really have this nuance in English, but when a Greek is in the when a word is in the present tense in the Greek language, it speaks about an ongoing or continuous action. And so what John is saying here is that he has written these things so that you might believe, and not just believe once, but that you would go on believing. You see, often when we ask somebody, do you believe in Jesus? What we are in fact asking them is, at some point in your past history, have you prayed a prayer or have you made Jesus your Lord and Savior, right? That's often what we mean when we ask, do you believe in Jesus? Have you made a decision in the past to make him yours, to follow him, to be his disciple, however we want to describe it? John does not use the word believe this way, because John puts it in the present tense, because John wants us to go on believing. For John, to believe in Jesus is an action, and it's an ongoing action. That for John, he wants us to believe in such a way where it's not just a one-time thing, but in our present life, we go on believing. So we will go on believing that we might be nurtured in our life with Christ. That's what John means when he says belief. The last thing I want to note about the way that John uses this word believe, because it'll come up over and over and over again as we go through his gospel. More often than not, when John uses this word believe, he uses it with another Greek word, a Greek preposition. It's the word eis, and it means into. In our English translations, we usually see it translated this way, that we are to believe in Jesus. Actually, let me give you an example. Verse 12 of John 1. John 1 says, yet to all who did receive Jesus, to those who believed in his name. We translate that word eis as in, but it should be translated into, because that's what it means as John uses it. That we are people who believe not in Jesus, but we believe into Jesus. This word has a directionality toward it. It means toward, that we are to believe not just in Jesus or on Jesus, but we believe into Jesus. And I think there's a world of difference. So when John speaks about believing in Jesus, he writes these things so that you would believe in Jesus. It's this believing that has an action to it, that continues on in the present. And it's a believing where we believe into Jesus. Leon Morris, biblical scholar, he has captured it well. He writes this in his commentary, speaking about faith, about belief. He says, according to John, faith is an activity that takes the disciples out of themselves and makes them one with Christ, not simply resting in Jesus, but moving into Jesus. Not simply resting in Jesus, but moving into Jesus. What a picture for belief. That when someone asks you, do you believe in Jesus, may your imagination be sparked to think of so much more than a decision you made in the past. Though that's important, that's the most important first step. But that you might believe, and you might believe into Jesus. That is why John writes this gospel. And I think that's beautiful. I think it's beautiful because it means that we don't have to have it all figured out to take a step of faith. That we don't need to have Jesus all figured out. That we don't need to believe or understand everything about Jesus before we begin to believe into Jesus. No matter where you're at on your life with God, John is inviting you to believe into Jesus. And as we believe into Jesus, we experience more of his grace, more of his love, more of his healing, more of his provision, more of his joy and wholeness. This is John's invitation to you. He writes these things so that you might believe. In verse 31, it tells us what we receive when we believe. John writes these things so that you might believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. John wants you to have life. That as you believe into Jesus, there is life. What is this life? What is John speaking about when he uses this word life? What does he want us to have as we believe into Jesus? Well, allow me to try and answer that by drawing your attention to three different passages in the book of John. The first we've already read. It's in John chapter 1, verse 4. In Jesus was life. The thing that John wants us to have. In Jesus was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. And in John chapter 5, we read, "For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son also to have life in himself." And so in these first two passages, we see that the life that John wants us to have is the very life that was in God before the creation of the world, the life that was in the Word. And it's the same life that is in the Father, and the same life that the Father has put in the Son. So when John comes along and says, these things are written so that you might have life, he's saying the kind of life he wants you to have is the same life that was in God from the very beginning. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made, and in him was life. That life is the life that John wants you to have. And he's saying the way to receive that life, the way to live into that life, is to believe into Jesus. That's a big statement. It's a big story. When John uses the word life, he uses a particular Greek word. There's so much rich stuff going on in here. I love it. The word that John uses to speak about life in his gospel is the Greek word zoe. Zoe. Remember that word. Zoe. Now, John had a number of different words that he could have chosen from to talk about life. One of the words that he could have chosen was bios. Bios means life as well. Bios is where we get our English word biology, right? A bios is a natural life, a biological life. Bios is what we get when we're born. A bios is the kind of life that we need to nurture, right? We have to nurture bios with air and food and water. It needs to be sustained. And we know that bios, before long, it runs out. It decays. That bios, it dies. John does not use the word bios to speak about life. He uses the word zoe. And zoe is not bios. Zoe is the life that was in God in the beginning. Zoe was the life, the very life of God. Zoe is the kind of life that does not decay, the kind of life that does not run down, the kind of life that does not die. This is the kind of life that John wants you to have. It's the kind of life that is in God. C.S. Lewis, in his book, Mere Christianity, this is a beauty, this book, classic. He says it well. Let me read a few of his paragraphs. He writes this: "A statue has the shape of a man, but it is not alive. In the same way, man has the shape or likeness of God, but he has not got the kind of life God has. Life, in this biological sense, is not the same as the life there is in God. It is only a kind of symbol or shadow of it. What man, in his natural condition, has not got is spiritual life, the higher and different sort of life that exists in God. We use the same word, life, for both. But if you thought that both must therefore be the same sort of thing, that would be like thinking that the greatness of space and the greatness of God were the same sort of greatness. In reality, the difference between biological life and spiritual life is so important that I'm going to give them two distinct names. The biological sort, which comes to us through nature, and which, like everything else in nature, is always tending to run down and decay, so that it can only be kept up by incessant subsidies from nature in the form of air and water and food, that is bios. The spiritual life which is in God from all eternity and which made the whole universe, is Zoe. Bios has, to be sure, a certain shadowy or symbolic resemblance to Zoe, but only the sort of resemblance there is between a photo and a place, or a statue and a man. A man who has changed from having bios to Zoe would have gone through as big a change as a statue which changed from being carved stone to being a real man. John writes these things so that you may have Zoe. And the Zoe of God is like changing a human person from a statue of stone to a real living person. Perhaps you're here this morning and you feel like something's missing in your life. You can't quite put your finger on it, but you feel like something's missing. I believe it's the Zoe of God, the life of God. And Jesus is inviting you to believe into him, to give your yes to him, even in this moment, and receive the Zoe of God. Others of you here this morning, perhaps you have known the life of God, the life that God gives. You've known it at one point in your life, but these days you feel so far removed from his life. Whether that's because of a decision you made in your past, or perhaps it's a relationship that has led you away from the Zoe of God. I want you to know that Jesus, that he's welcoming you. He's inviting you to return once again, to believe into him in such a way where you might have Zoe. And maybe there's some among us here who are ill, who are sick, and you're clinging to bios. Oh, we all get that. But what you need to know this morning is that God has the Zoe, life of God, that is far greater than the bios life that we feel trapped in. And that as you believe into Jesus, he has life, not just for an eternal future, but he has life today. The life that was in God before the creation of the world. The Zoe life of God. As we step through the book of John, may you know that he writes these things so that you may believe into Jesus, and in believing into Jesus, that we might have life. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. And in him was Zoe. And that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to those who did receive him, to those who believed into his name, he gave the right to be called children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of a human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. we have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son sent from the Father, full of grace and truth. John testified concerning him. He cried out, saying, "This is the one I spoke about when I said, 'He who comes after me has surpassed me, because he was before me.' Out of his fullness, we have all received grace in place of grace already given. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God, he has made him known."